You know, these bowls, most of these bowls were hidden underground for long periods of time during the, I think they first got buried during the Chinese occupation in the early 50s or the late 40s. And I always find it interesting how they insist on the fact that, most Tibetans insist on the fact that this is a, these are food bowls. I mean, that these are literally are food bowls. I mean, this is the story you get. So, what I just think is interesting, now maybe it's cultural, but we all have food bowls in our culture, right? Do any of them sound like this? You know, there's the, you know, with all the creativity that's part of being an American, there's no one that said so far, hey, we need a singing food bowl. Like, you know, and your kid comes down to breakfast, you know, and he says, oh, I want my cornflakes. You know? It just never has occurred. So I've always just, I always want to make that comment because obviously the bowls have some kind of significance that we're not supposed to know about. There's some kind of secret. And I want to begin with that idea when we talk about the sixth chakra. And that's the idea that fuels the sixth chakra, which is, sixth chakra is that chakra that says, what is everything essentially about? Why would somebody make a bowl, supposedly just to put rice in, and make it so that when you strike it, it makes five or six multiple tones and sustains itself for 2 or 3 minutes? There's a part of you that wants to know. There's a part of you that when you look at, on a sixth chakra level, at the sound that the bowl is making, sees a certain kind of pattern, something that affects you there. And perhaps you don't understand why you're affected. But urge to find out why. That urge to look under the surface of things is the way that most of us see the sixth chakra. Most of us perceive the sixth chakra. Our whole idea of truth, at least in this culture, is usually it's something that's hidden. Something that's beneath the surface. Think about it as a people, we very rarely look at something, you know, we're sitting at home and we're watching President Clinton on TV. And he's saying, what was his thing? He didn't have sexual relations with this woman. And it doesn't really occur to any of us really to sit there and say, well, I believe that. Because we look at it and we say, whatever's being told to us on the surface, usually most of us say there's something underneath that. Why does he even have to say he didn't have sex with her, for example? So, there is a part of us that is attuned to the idea that the truth is somehow buried underneath everything. When you try to understand yourself, for example, why you act a certain way, most of the time, you don't take the surface fact of whatever you're doing. So, for example, if I'm really hungry, I can get in a real pissy mood. You know, I'm just hungry. And if you bother me while I'm hungry, I'd be pretty, you know, not... I don't say I'd be unpleasant, but you know, if you were listening to me, you'd feel this part of me that's saying I'm talking to you, but in reality, I'd rather be eating. In fact, you're standing in the way of my eating. Now, I can look at, therefore, so if I know that about myself, when I'm, say, at a class, and I've been there for a while, I haven't eaten, and I've been talking to people, at the end of a class, Sometimes I can find myself getting irritated. And so, sometimes I mention this to people, spiritual people, and they say to me, well, you know, it's probably just all the entities in the room are still continuing to draw energy from you, even though the class is over. Or those people in the class, all you evil people out there, are still drawing on my energy. And it makes me angry. Or in a past life, when I was done a class one time, someone killed me. So I'm irritated about that. Well, the sixth chakra would look, this is in some people, someone that would tell me these things would be someone who believes they use their sixth chakra. They're finding out what's underneath things. And I can certainly be guilty of that myself, too. But sometimes the truth is actually just sitting there on the surface. I'm hungry. The funniest example of this that I ever encountered was that my sister once was going out with a fellow who was involved with Christians very heavily, and he felt that I was the devil himself. And it wasn't simply like I was astray. I was definitely, you know, when they're cutting out cow eyeballs and doing pentagrams somewhere, they were doing it for me. So he would call me up and tell me to stop sending evil messages to him. You know. Remember, some of you remember I had a dog named Lamb Chop. And he would say that I was sending Lamb Chop to his mind, and Lamb Chop would speak to him. Tell him to do evil things. Which is really actually a common image of satanic imagery, talking dogs. I think that's very interesting. It's like a strong point of satanic literature is speaking dogs. And I find it interesting because we have cartoons full of speaking dogs. So perhaps the devil is getting to us. And then this evolved into when I wouldn't validate this. I guess for some reason he believed that I someday would admit to being Satan. Then I was getting aliens to influence him. And this would go on and on. And I tried, you know, I was, you know, a clairvoyant for a couple of years at the time, and I was trying to understand this. And he called my mother one day, which is the wrong thing to do, and started to tell him this story about her son, Satan, was creating all sorts of havoc in his life. And you can imagine, we're a very loyal family, so if in my family you start saying one of us is Satan, like, you know, one of, like, someone's partner or boyfriend or whatever, he starts to say that there are, like, someone said to me, my sister was Satan, well, I wouldn't associate with them. We're a very close family in that way, you know, it's just like, we know that life is pretty goofy, but we know certain things, and one of them is neither one of us is Satan. We all figured that out. So my sister, you know, was pulling away from this guy, not wanting to be with him. So he called my mother with this long tale of woe. And he went on with her for about a half hour, 45 minutes. And then my mother just stopped him and said, you're just mad because my daughter doesn't want to go out with you anymore. And everything stopped at that point. In other words, the surface reason, real simply, my sister said, you know, this guy's a loser. He wants to be around with this guy. I had missed. I was looking for the deep inner secret. What was wrong with this guy? And ultimately, what turned out to be wrong with him was that he had a brain tumor the size of a baseball, which, you know, tends to contribute to your seeing alien beings and what have you. And so I want to begin talking about the sixth chakra by saying that the sixth chakra is not necessarily an instrument of truth, quote unquote. It does see a world that your physical eyes do not see. It sees a world of color, of pattern, of images that exist in a non-physical realm. In doing so, it oftentimes provides clues to things that we are not consciously, that is, on the physical plane, showing to other people. Why we think of the sixth chakra as a truth-telling mechanism usually comes from childhood. Some children are just born with an ability to have clairvoyance, whether through their efforts in other lifetimes or for whatever reason. Some kids are just really good at it. In other words, they look and they perceive the patterns. For example, the emotion of anger makes a certain kind of pattern. Most of us have a certain pattern we associate with anger. An observant child will see this. Now, an observant child seeing that, and usually being innocent, will tend to go by what she or he sees. In other words, if they think mom is real upset about something, is going to talk to mom as if she's really upset. If mom says, that's not true, I'm not upset, and repeats that often enough, pretty soon the child has to usually make a choice. Who's right? Is mom right? Nothing's really wrong, I'm just seeing things. I'm imagining things. Children who usually have a clairvoyant ability are often told that they are imagining things. I think you and dad or might break up. You're just imagining that. We love each other very much. And so when we get divorced a month from now, remember that. The child oftentimes gets the idea, most clairvoyant children ultimately will try to, in some ways, trust themselves. And so they'll look and they'll say, you can't trust what someone tells you. That is, what's on the surface of things. You can only trust what you see in this underneath kind of way. What's beneath the skin on the surface. And so this develops this idea that somehow the sixth chakra is the truth-telling chakra. And in its perfect function, what it gives you is a very clear imprint of the energy around you. And by its perfect function, I mean when it's simply an open receptive chakra that allows the impressions of everything around you to come into you. The sixth chakra has a great capability of simply allowing something to name itself. And I want you to think of that concept for a minute. I know it might seem odd to some of you. Allowing something to name itself. Allowing its energy to its signature, if you will, into you. This is something that is frightening in the extreme for most people. I would suggest to you that one of the reasons that people don't see, don't use their sixth chakra, is because in our culture, mastery, the idea of controlling things, is defined not by letting things name themselves, but by naming things, projecting. I think one of the best examples of this is in our myth of creation. In our myth of creation, Yahweh, and this is, you know, the one that we all kind of get weaned on as a child, Yahweh comes and creates the world in 6 days. And after Yahweh creates the world and creates, what's that guy's name, Adam, what does he have Adam do? He has Adam go and name everything. This tree, this an apple tree, this an armadillo, this a snake. And as after he names him, he says, "Behold, I give you propriety over all the beasts of the field and all the lands and all everything that is on this earth." And it's connected with the idea of naming, projecting something. So I would suggest to you, and I would just ask you to think about this, in our culture, power is defined by those who project their own vision and define the world around them. That's not clairvoyance. That's vision, and that's fine. Clairvoyance, however, in this culture, true clairvoyance is exactly the opposite of this power. And so I would suggest to you that underlying most difficulties in seeing is a fear of a powerlessness. You won't name things. You won't decide what this is. It will decide for you. What stands between the six chakras' basic ability to simply take an impression, if you will, metaphorically like a very complex camera, to take an impression of what's around it, the only thing that really blocks that ability is our desire to control our environment, our desire to be in some way a master of things, our desire to project what we see rather than to actually see it. It's the only thing that stands in the way of you seeing is your desire to know something. If you name something, you know something. I name my cat Gabby because she's always making a lot of noise. So I know she's Gabby. I know that. Knowledge. I would suggest to you that the sixth chakra, although it intersects with the brain, which is our knowledge-gathering place, in its most pristine form, the sixth chakra has nothing to do with what we think of as knowledge. It has to do with simply recording the reality as it is. It doesn't say, as I look out here, it doesn't say, oh, I see Pete, I know Pete. It just says, there's this energy there. It's this color. It's sending out this vibration. That's it. That's all it says. And it doesn't say, and this is good, and this is bad. It just says, there it is. Now, I may become familiar with that vibration and say, wait, I have a file somewhere on this. Oh, yeah, that vibration, that color, we call that vibration Pete. Hi, Pete. How you doing? We have a reference form for what we see. And it's a very tricky line between simply using what you know. In other words, you know that there's a certain characteristic, a certain emotional pattern that you identify as your friend, and you know what that friend's name is, that's stored in your memory. But it's very hard for most people not to get used to a certain image of a person, for example. So if I say, say my first five experiences of, let me pick on someone else, Carolyn. I like to pick on her. My first five experiences of Carolyn are all, boy, she's a wonderful, laughing, joyous, wonderful woman. You know, she makes me laugh. I'm really happy. So in my mind, I can start to, instead of simply saying, what is this person about when she appears in my visual field, I can start looking and saying, oh, as soon as I see anything I can recognize as her, any little piece, I can say, oh, that's Carolyn, that wonderful, wacky, up-tempo, upbeat lady. In other words, I can project from my past experience of her.
And so if Carolyn that day happens to be miserable, parsnickety, and not wanting to talk to anyone, I would totally miss it. If she has this energy of like, you know, the only thing I wish today is that I could go in my room and close the door and that no one would touch me, and I come around, I'm there giving her a big hug and say, oh, how you doing, Carolyn? It's so great. In my mind, it's like, oh, this is this wonderful, warm person that always, you know, embraces me. But I'm not looking and seeing that, well, right now, this person wants to be left alone. One of the problems that gets in the way of clairvoyance is the very basic problem of experience, or, if you will, karma. The sixth chakra is one of the great repositories. I would say it is the master repository of karmic patterns, of what you know from the past. And because, as I've mentioned earlier, that we as a people are conditioned to know things, to name things, our tendency is not in this culture to let things come into us and let them define themselves. It is rather to project from our experience onto other people. This is knowledge. I'm a good reader of human people. Of people. I'm a good reader of people, someone will say. I have lots of experience. And so, you know, when I come in and I see someone with their shoulders hunched up like this, I look in my field of experience and say, people who have shoulders who are hunched up like this around their ears usually have a lot of stress. And many times I'd be right. But I really wouldn't be seeing that person. What I'd be seeing is that I have a particular file on what stressful people look like, and one of you matches that. You do this all the time. And sometimes you're right. It matches. The difficulty is that we always come into situations where whatever our karmic programming is, whatever our experience is, doesn't tell us what we need to know. Doesn't make us feel that we have any sense of control or any sense of even integration into a situation. So we look at someone and say, and we do this in relationships a lot, you look at someone and you say, I should get along really well with this person. They have everything that I want in a person. They're physically attractive, they're intelligent. How come it doesn't work? You know, it's like as if you're looking at your file. And, you know, and your file says, you know, women with blonde hair and nice figures are good to be with. That's been my experience. Okay. And how come so-and-so is such a pain in the tail? I can't wait to get out of her sight. And then people come to me for readings. There must be something underneath all this. It's your projection. Sometimes past life issues come into this. This happens a great deal. I always find it fascinating that people want to meet others from their past lives. Why? You usually think of that person in that context again. So if I remember Alexis as this person that took care of my every need in a past life, sure, I'm great to see Alexis again. Alexis, oh, hey, good, I need a cup of coffee. Would you get it for me? Well, you know, the woman that's here now, that may be the furthest thing from her mind. And the part of me that says, I don't know what's wrong with Alexis. I'm always trying to be nice to her, and she just blows me off. Well, what you may be doing is simply projecting this woman or this person you knew onto them. So you're not really seeing them. Most people get annoyed when you don't see them. I say most people. Some people are very grateful. Some people like your projections. And this reinforces it. Oftentimes you hear this in relationships too. You say, I never knew I was a real, what I had in me as a man. I never knew what a good man I could be till I married so-and-so. And she knew that I wasn't really a broken down, wife-beaten alcoholic. She saw me as, you know, the head of a great enterprise, and now today I'm, you know, in head of hair club for men or something. And that works sometimes. That part of us that, for example, when you get in a relationship, likes to change someone, that's your projection. You see the potential of that person. Part of you says, you know, in other lifetimes, I've seen people like you before. You can be made into something. And you set out to do so. You mold them. You shape them. You project everything you can onto them. And it's like, think of a projection, it's like projecting a set of clothing to people. Here, dear, how do you think you'd look in this slinky attire? And the woman looks at you like, I'd feel like a sausage wrapped up in a casing. And in your mind, you're there like, gee, I see visions of sensuality. What's wrong? But someone might say that and say, oh, he thinks I'm beautiful in this. I'm willing to take his word for it. Hey, great, here you go. So I just want you to see that there is support for projections. We get them all the time. If I feel like the lowest of the low and someone comes to me and says, gee, you're the smartest man I ever met, well, you know, it's pretty hard not to just look at that and say, well, here I have two options. I'm worthless, I'm the smartest man this person ever met. What should I do? Go for it. You know, since I'm the smartest person you ever met, great. Inside your sixth chakra, there's carried a basic karmic program that goes from lifetime to lifetime. And this program basically defines what you see. The sixth chakra usually has a very definite connection to the first chakra, your survival place, the place where what you know has to be translated into a personality that can survive. So if in my sixth chakra, my experience says, only the tough ass survive in this world, when I'm born as a little kid and my chakra system is formed, that karmic message, reinforced by many lifetimes, gets sent down to my first chakra. And so the personality that begins to be shaped there is, I'm a tough ass little kid. Get out of my way, Mom. I'll breastfeed myself, thank you. You know, it's like that. You see some children, all of a sudden, they're in there, and they, you know, they act like, you know, that there's a war on, that they're living somehow in this survival mode, and they're taking charge, you know, and they're only like 2 years old, and you're there like, geez, where's this come from? It's a program. We all have a program that says what you need to be to survive, and that includes what you need to see around you in order to survive. What kind of world you need to project in order to survive. One of the reasons that we have so many conspiracy theories now is that the world that was projected that we could survive in has changed a great deal. Most people projected a world, like it or not, of a certain kind of American dominance, or take that another way, a kind of a white-dominated world. There are these intelligent, rich people in America, mostly who are white, who basically will be the dominant force in this world for the rest of its life. I want you to just think about that. I mean, it's something that, you know, being born in a prosperous country, it does that to you. There's part of you that says, we're the head of things. We're the best culture on earth. But you know, that's changing. All of a sudden around us now, the world that we project is very solid, where we're the kind of center of where people look to America. All of a sudden, we have a world in which China is going to be like the next, if you will, America that evolves. You have a world in which other economies now, what happens in them affects us greatly. The stock market goes to hell in Japan. It's not like we sit there and say, well, you know, that's just those slanty-eyed people. They don't know what they're doing anyway. It won't affect us. Well, it does. That kind of prejudice that many have that says we're the center of things and what we do count, well, all of a sudden, that's no longer true. And so the world in which we are the dominant force is falling apart. And as it does so, it creates this gap where people can no longer project a world that they were safe in. And now they have to project another world that they can control. And so what usually comes out of that is conspiracy theories. conspiracy theory. Because it projects that I know something. I know that everything's going to go to hell in Y2K. That's the world that I'm, you know, projecting, that basically when it comes time for all them computers to turn over, everything's going to break down. You have money in the bank, you're not going to be able to get it out because the computer won't let you spit it out. You're going to be in trouble. So I'm preparing. I'm stockpiling water and, you know, I'm collecting deposits on milk bottles so I can get spare change going. You know, I'm converting my money into gold. I'm projecting a world which I can control. I can do something to. I can't do anything about the economy of China getting greater or the influence of Southeast Asian countries being stronger, but I can stockpile water. I want you to think of this because there's going, you know, there's a real gap. There's the world that was projected at the beginning of this century, which is essentially this Eurocentric world. It's just the projection just doesn't work anymore, and as it falls down, people are going to project conspiracy theories into it. What we see is usually determined by our experiences. We tend to get along with certain types of people, for example, because our experience tells us that we do. If you have a lot of the same kinds of friends, for example, your karma is usually pretty definitely in control of what you see, because you say, well, these are the kind of people that traditionally have been good to be friends with, so I'm friends with them. One of the signs, I think this is interesting, but one of the signs of the fact that you've broken down a lot of karmic patterns is that if you look at your collection of friends, you see this group of people that if you put them all in one room would say, what the hell am I doing here with these people? Because there's this response to people more as an individual. What is so-and-so like? And you respond to them as they are rather than saying, well, I know what this person's like. In 603, I met such a person and they were a real pain to me, so I never talked to people like that again. For most people, their karma determines what they see. So the process of seeing, in some ways, is a process of letting go of what you know. And that is very difficult. Because most of us, in some ways, are paid for what we know. It's our lives. You know, whether you're cutting hair, working with a computer, whether you're a doctor, you know, whatever you are, you're being paid for some knowledge that you have. And all of a sudden, someone comes along and says, well, if you want to actually see what's there, you have to realize that you don't know anything. You have to just drop the idea that you knowing something is important. I think that's a more accurate way to say it. You have to drop the idea that you knowing something, that what you know is of primary importance. And that's what is so hard. When you find yourself trying to see something you can't see clearly, I would suggest it's because you think you know something about what you're looking at. The easiest way to open up to a situation which stumps you sometimes is to admit that you know nothing about it. If you're in a relationship and it makes no sense to you, it's good to sit down and say to yourself, this makes no sense to me. I have no concept of what's going on here. And it's at that moment in time that knowledge, and we're very practical about knowledge. If it doesn't work, throw it away. We throw it away. And so most of the time, people that go through opening up their clairvoyance find they have to throw a lot of what they think they know away. Whether it is something about themselves, for example, say you think that you're a very caring, emotional, compassionate person, and you get together with someone who says, you're the most selfish, egotistical person I ever met. I would suggest in order to understand that, situation, rather than having dueling projections, you have to ask, you have to say to yourself, okay, so maybe I don't know everything about me. Maybe it's possible for me to be selfish, inconsiderate, you know, what have you. Most of us aren't willing to do that. Because most of us say, well, gee, that's a bad thing. And from my perspective, no, all I'm saying to you is, you have to be willing to look and say that any image of you is possible. That one person can look at you and say, you're the smartest person on earth. And someone else can look at you and say, you're the great Satan. Neither one has to be taken as correct. But if you want to understand who's saying that you're this mean, evil, inconsiderate person, on some level you're going to have to accept that vision of yourself, not project something that fights it. Our natural defense would be to use the sixth chakra's ability to project energy to say, that's not true. You might argue with them, you might try to prove it to them by being compassionate or what have you to them. But our impulse is to defend ourselves. When you're being very defensive, you're usually going through some kind of issue, some kind of crisis within the sixth chakra. There's a dueling image of you. There's an image of you that you can't accept. And you're fighting with it. You're fighting with it. Sixth chakra, because it tends to store information in terms of patterns and images, is very good, is the one of the best projecting chakras. You can literally project an image over someone such that you literally don't see them. Sixth chakra has that ability. It responds to that part of you. Projection is that part of you that wants to say that you know something. We project because we think we know something. My experience is correct. Another way to look at projection is we project primarily because inside, on some deep level, where of course the truth is, you think that you don't understand what's around you. I mean, that's a response we have too. In fact, that's what most people do. If they're in a situation and they look and they don't understand something, most people try to give things a chance. You know, they walk into a situation trying to be open-minded, but as soon as something is not understood, what do? They project into it. They project into it. One time I had a student that I was joking with one time, and we were standing in such a way that the light was making a tremendous shadow. This person was casting a strong shadow. And some of you remember the old radio show, The Shadow. The Shadow had the power to cloud men's minds, make them see what they want. So since this person was a clairvoyant, and since they were casting this strong shadow, and since I was joking with them, they were saying something to me like, look at that shadow. And I said, yes, you must have the power to cloud men's minds. And it was a joke, you know, it's just like this offhanded kind of thing. Shadow, the shadow, the power to cloud men's minds. Okay. So the person didn't understand this and went back and evolved this whole point about clouding men's minds and how I thought that was a negative thing and how I was really saying something really negative about them, and that I was really doing this because in reality I had no respect for them. And then they came and told me all this. It took about 45 minutes. And they said, why did you say that? And then I explained to them just what I explained to you. Shadow, cloud men's minds, clairvoyant, blah, 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 da-da. And it was very hard, and that was the only thing that was in my mind at the time. And I remember the look on the person's face. It was so hard for them to release all of this knowledge that they had acquired about this situation. So sometimes when we get something we don't understand, we fill in the gaps. We do this constantly, you know. I'm standing there in a store, you know, and I'm waiting to be waited on, and the salesperson, there's three of us standing there, the salesperson looks at three of us and decides to wait on this person over here, even though maybe I'm here first. Part of me says, this person don't like me. Because I don't understand why, if I'm standing here, you wouldn't choose me to deal with first. I was here first. So I take what I don't understand and I shove something in there so I do understand. Well, she don't like me, obviously. So she's waiting on this person. It's a projection. It's just a projection. We do this all the time with partners, you know. If we don't understand how they're acting, we immediately look and say, this is, you know, they're doing, you know, it's something that they don't like me anymore. They don't like me anymore because, you know, they didn't come, when they came home today, they didn't smile at me. It's like, whoa. We fill in the gaps. We don't understand something, we tend to project into it. Because when we project, we think we know something. We're trying to salve ourselves. And this projecting function gets in the way of seeing things, because what we ultimately wind up being able to see is what we think. The other thing that gets in the way of clairvoyance is one of the factors of the sixth chakra is the sixth chakra is a place where we interpret things, as you can imagine from what I'm saying. By interpreting, think of it this way, the sixth chakra takes in knowledge and it connects it with everything else it's known. But before it does this, before it has this connecting function, it has a dissecting function. It looks at something and says, what is this about? And it tries to dissect it, take it apart. So the sixth chakra has this ability to literally break things down. As some of you experienced, to go under layers and layers, to go through the arcane labyrinth of thought processes and, you know, try to get to some source, some ur place, if you will. The problem that comes with this is the sixth chakra, as I've said before, is always expecting to find the truth about someone. And when it takes things apart, what it usually finds is what it has is a lot of parts, because consciousness is a cumulative thing. Consciousness, I would suggest to you, comes not from any one singular part of you, but the fact that there are all these different parts together, and that when they come together, they make something that no one part itself could contain. So when you take all those things apart, at the end, all you have is parts. So this part of the sixth chakra that likes to find the truth and dissects things in order to find the truth oftentimes keeps you from seeing something, because all it does is take things apart. It doesn't give you the complete picture. It can only give you pieces of the picture. You only understand pieces of a person, for example. This taking apart function is also the critical function of the sixth chakra. If you have a strong sixth chakra, you're prone to criticism, essentially. If you look at something and say, this could be done better this way, you have a strong sixth chakra. If you sit and listen to someone talking and saying, what he's saying is good, but it could be better said this way, this is that critical function of the sixth chakra. You have to watch it. If you find yourself someone who likes to interpret things, if you have this urge to get to the truth, your sixth chakra has this thing, part of you that takes things apart, and what it will do is it will influence your words such that whatever comes out of your sixth chakra will many times be calculated on taking people apart. That is, getting rid of the veneer that you see that's in the way of knowing what they're about. People who tease have this really strongly. You ever see somebody, now, you ever watch, like, children tease one another. When you watch it from the outside, you say, like, gee, the person that's teasing this other person, why are they doing this? It looks really aggressive, really cruel. Yet to the person doing it, they may not even see the aggression of it. All they see is they're taking this person apart. They're pushing them beyond whatever reserve they have. They want them to, say, break down and cry. They want them to get really angry and hit them. They want to get beyond some structure that they see that's in front of them, knowing what this person is about. They want to break it down. So oftentimes people that tease are clairvoyant. And they're using that taking apart function, they're trying to take apart the facade you have to try to find out what the hell's underneath it. I want to go back to what I said earlier about children and clairvoyance, because I think there's some ideas that bear repeating there, too. If a child sees a world that is not validated by the people around him or her, they have a number of responses that are open to them. Many clairvoyants, when they find their world not validated, say, well, I know what I see is true, and they go deep inside. And they sit and they watch and they look at things. They try not to be involved in things because their experience is, if I get involved with telling people what I think or what I know, no one's going to believe me, no one's going to accept my vision of things, so they keep it deep inside themselves. These are the people that always seem very inward. When they talk to you, they're very circumspect about what they say. They don't reveal what's inside of them, oftentimes, because they have had no validation. This becomes a habit. In other words, you start to habitually not to trust, if you will, what people say to you. You only trust what you think inside. But it's a problem. You grow up and you decide you want to, say you want to get married. So the person you marry says, well, you know, I promised to help take care of you and this or that. And inside of you, part of you says, I don't believe that. I just don't believe it. I've had people telling me they've been taking care of my rear end all my life, and I've not felt that way. So why the hell should I believe them? This, again, is a projection. This person may clearly want to take care of you and may know how to, but you wouldn't see it because your experience would tell you it's better not to trust anybody. Other people are stupid, essentially. One of the things is like, if you might be a redneck, you might be a clairvoyant if you think other people are stupid. If that's one of your common thoughts as you go through the day, like, people are idiots, you usually have some clairvoyant function going. Because you, in your mind, you're seeing something very different than what's going on the surface. It's like, clairvoyance oftentimes don't know what to do with what they see. The only thing you can do is really have judgments. This person's stupid. It's just an outlet for clairvoyance. You oftentimes see it in teenagers, because teenagers have a point where their clairvoyance opens up. And most teenagers, they just use it as a time to be critical of everything. Because they start to see below the surface of things, and so they see that basically reality is not simply what's being presented to them on the surface. So like a daughter, for example, that's always looked up to her dad, all of a sudden when she's 14, they look and say, gee, you know, dad's kind of like a blithering alcoholic. Why the hell am I looking up to him? And all of a sudden, this great rapport that the two had all of a sudden just goes kapoof. just a critical function of the sixth chakra opening up. Sometimes children that have been clairvoyant respond to being told what they see isn't true in more unique ways. Like if you're a more accommodating soul, you might look and say, well, all right, what I'm being told is how I'm seeing the world isn't working. I want to fit in with everybody else, so how do we do things? And so you watch and you say, oh, what mom does is she projects that this is how the world is and we all agree with it, whether it's that way or not. Oh, that's what you do. So, say you grow up and say, you know, there's this constant antagonism between your parents, but it's never presented. Or it's like one of those classic cases where somebody in the family is real dysfunctional. Say they're an alcoholic or they have some kind of addiction. But nothing's ever accepted as being wrong. You ask your mom about it, it's like, no, your father's just tired, dear. He's, you know, that's why he's laying there snoring on the sofa. He's not passed out. And you say, part of your clairvoyance is, no, Dad's passed out. But you look and say, but my mother, who's trying to preserve this world and seems to really care for me, says, no, if you want to get along in the world, you better learn to project the world you want to see. And what you want to see is not your father is drunk, but rather your father is tired. Get it? Not drunk, tired. Project that. Okay. So you learn how to do it. Then the problem comes in that you usually then recreate a situation much similar to the one you grew up in, where the world you project is very different than the world you actually live in, whether it includes someone with addictions or simply ignoring emotional problems that are in a relationship. Most of us have had the experience in some kind of relationship or another where you go to your partner and say, I think something's really wrong with this relationship. I feel this way. I find you being really angry at me. I find myself being real defensive towards you, this and that. And they look at you and they say, that's not true. We get along real well. You say, gee, yeah, maybe I missed something. What you're looking at is someone who learned as a clairvoyant, like how you use your clairvoyant facility. You can use it to project. You can project the world you want and live in it. That's what life is about. That's how you survive. Many people get this lesson from their parents. Project the world you want to live in and live in it. That's how you'll get along. So sometimes, you know, a child can find their vision denied, and instead of being kind of rebellious and saying, well, then I'm going to stick to my vision and to hell with you, in other words, wall themselves off in a very inward way, they can simply go the opposite way, be very external, say, fine, whatever we project, whatever we see is good. So if we fight all weekend but then get dressed up and real nice and act nice in church on Sunday and everybody sees us, then we're a happy family, right? Right, okay. That's what we do. So this is a long way to say, you can have a strong sixth chakra function and be a very inward, very quiet, very, you might say, cynical, critical individual. Or you can be a very extroverted, very, you might say, very upbeat, considered someone who's very positive kind of individual, who is always saying to people, come on, no, nothing's wrong, we can do this, and projecting an image. And you can see where that's valuable. Say you're in a work situation and the people you're in charge with tend to depression. They tend to think, oh, everything's going to hell. We'll never get this project done. And you're their project manager and you come in and you say, come on, no, we can get this done. You'll do this and you'll do this and you'll do this and it will get done. And you project this out very strongly. And people say, well, if your projection is strong enough, they go, okay, and they do it. Most good motivators are good projectors. Projection has, projection is only a problem if you want to see clairvoyantly. If you want to motivate people, projection is a wonderful quality. It is a wonderful quality. Don't take it as, oh, projection always bad. All projection does is it stands in the way of you seeing at times what is in front of you. But you can project and excite people. Excite people. Get them excited about doing something. Most big leaders have a vision. They project a vision. Very rarely do great leaders, from my perspective, talk about things as they are. What we consider great leaders are people who project an idea of how things could be. Always think of this when you think of, you may think this is a nod reference, but you think of the Massachusetts Bay Colony between 1620 and 1629. These people are literally dying in a New England winter. They're like, their numbers are falling apart, and you got Cotton Mather standing up there on the pulpit saying, "This is the city on the hill. This is where God intended us to be. We are the privileged people of God." And meanwhile, everybody's, you know, boiling dogs and eating them because there's nothing else to eat. But that vision sustained them. So sometimes keeping people's mind off what's actually happening works well. So I'm saying this to you so you don't get the idea that every projection you make is a negative thing. It's only negative if you're sitting across from someone and trying to understand what they're doing. Because then all you'll get back is an understanding of your projection. Because clairvoyance, when it's well practiced, gives you a view of what is in the unconscious mind. Remember, if you adapt this no projection policy, people will start to, in some ways, either not trust you or look in askance at you because they can't hide anything from you. At least that's what they will believe. And if you're going to open up your clairvoyance, you're going to have to recognize that you're going to see things that people keep hidden. It's like, you know, going in, you're at a party at someone's house and there's this room that's closed and locked. And clairvoyance will let you in. You know, and you know that's the room that's like all the coats are thrown over there and everything that could be put away is all thrown in there. It's a big mess, whereas the rest of the house is clean. If you can look at that and not make any kind of judgment about it, but just say, yep, this is the room where the mess is, and leave it, then you can see. But if you have to, if you see things like that and you say, and this is bad, this is negative, you'll have trouble because you'll start to develop a very kind of cynical view of humankind because everybody hides something. I don't mean hiding in that sense of we're ashamed of it so much, but just simply we all want people to see different parts of us, certain parts of us, and we think other parts are more left to, you know, our loved ones, you know. You know, so that sloppy bathroom that's so clean when guests arrive, well, yeah, your partner can handle the sloppy bathroom. That's all right for them to see it, but you don't want that as part of your public persona. Yeah, I went to his house, had a sloppy bathroom. Can't trust a person with a sloppy bathroom. So you have to be willing to look at someone's and look at something and recognize that, for example, that bathroom that looks so clean is actually most of the time really sloppy and not think anything of it. Because if you do, you'll start getting this view of people, everybody has something to hide, therefore no one's telling the truth, therefore I can't trust everyone, and therefore I become paranoid. Paranoia is a good sign of clairvoyance. If you feel paranoid, you may be a clairvoyant. But the fact remains, how do you train yourself to see? How do you train yourself to stop projecting? It's a difficult task because, as I said earlier, it means giving up that what you know is the most important thing in the world, that your knowledge is the most important knowledge. And since your knowledge is tied up with your first chakra, survival, you're giving up, in some ways, the means to survive. What you know is essential to survival. most people that open up as clairvoyants go through some great change in their life, where their personality, their job, how they approach their entire life changes. Because they literally give up a first chakra identity in order to see. One of the hardest things I find as a clairvoyant, and this give you an idea of what your first chakra identity does. Your first chakra identity says is the part of you that when someone says, hey, you want to go over to Cafe Bernardo's and have a turkey burger? Your first chakra identity says, yeah, I'm the kind of guy that likes turkey burgers. Sure, okay. And goes. If you take that away, as I was always interesting after I do a lot of clairvoyant work, hey, Walter, you want to go to Cafe Bernardo's and have a turkey burger? Whatever you want. There's no part of me that's used to projecting what I think is good in the world. Turkey burger, salad, whatever it is. So I'm used to sitting there saying, what do you want? I'm used to letting the world flow into me. So if you ask me, what do I want? I have no idea. I'm not thinking of myself. I've lost, you know, if you do clairvoyant reading enough, and especially if you do it like throughout a day, you lose a consciousness of what you want. That's why oftentimes people that do clairvoyant work, you wind up doing all this work, you know, and you feel fine when you're doing it, you know, and you work for 6 or 7 hours, and all of a sudden, when you stop, it's like you haven't been considering yourself, and all of a sudden, as you start to begin to consider yourself again, you say, boy, this self is tired. Boy, this self feels real antagonistic. Geez, where was that beautiful energy that I was working on this whole time? Well, it's an energy that was simply taking impressions of other people. It wasn't looking at its needs. So sometimes someone that's been really involved, and you might find this yourself, if you take a lot of time and you've been looking at things, you've been meditating a lot, you've been trying to understand like your relationship or what's going on inside you, and someone says to you, well, what do you want to do? You know, where do you want to go? You'll just look. You haven't any idea. Because that basic identity in the first chakra that usually says, yeah, I have certain likes and dislikes. You know, I don't like vegetarian food that's basically all cheesy, you know. And so I always laugh because I always get myself in trouble when I go, if I'm out, when I'm traveling, because I'll do clairvoyant work all day and then it's like it'll be time to eat. And so if I have, there's sometimes a host there and the host will say, well, where do you want to go to dinner? And part of me just says, dinner, do I eat? I forgot. You know, I know other people eat, but so I'll just, oh, choose, you know. And so this person will choose something for me, and I get there, and I say, you know, and if Mary Frances is there, she gives me that look like, yeah, you never would have said you would have eaten here if you really thought about this. And it's like, yeah, that's true. What am I doing here with this? You know, it's like, you know, it's like you think like, gee, I'm going to eat this. And so, you know, like if like 2 hours later, my first chakra personality comes back and I'm there like, geez, what am I doing in the seaweed palace here? You know, I'm not seaweed right now. This is the problem. If you deal with, and I ask you just to be compassionate with yourself about it. If you do a lot of clairvoyant work or you know someone that does, if you ask them what they want right after they're done, or if you ask yourself something that you want right after you're done, you're not going to know. You're not going to know. And so it's always better to do something physical. Go take a walk. Go, you know, do some yoga. Go have some kind of physical activity where you have to start relating to your body as a mechanism that you control that has wants and needs. And then if someone asks you, you can say, no, you know, I really don't want to go to the wienery for dinner, thank you. You know, you'll start to get it. Because sometimes when you don't know, you're simply used to taking in more of the energy of others than projecting your own energy. Remember, when someone asks you what you want, they're saying to you, project. Project. You know, there's a group of you and I say, where do you want to go to dinner? And one of you says, oh, I want to go to the Dragon Smorgasbord. And the other person says, I want to go to JJ North. And the other person says, I want to go to Biba's or something. you know, we take all these we're asking, so we put all these projections together and we see what we got. And so when someone asks you what you want, I mean, they are asking for a projection. And if you're having trouble with it, don't feel bad. Just remember that you may have been in a position, like those of you that are healthcare people, a lot of you have to basically sit there and not project who you, how you are onto these people. And so at the end of your day, many of you are not really going to have a great idea of what you want. You're just not. And it's not that you're stupid. It's just that you're not thinking of yourself. If you have a job where you take care of people's needs all day, when you get home, you're not going to immediately say, what I want is a nice juicy steak. It's going to take you a while. It's going to take you a while. And if you do have that kind of work, or you do some kind of healing work, you do have that kind of work, remember that people are going to seem, you're going to feel that people are controlling you. You know, most clairvoyants usually, who are good, usually, I can usually tell because they usually believe that their life is based around someone else. You know, because they're used to, like, getting rid of their projections, and so then, say, whoever they're married to, whoever their significant other is, you know, that's the person whose needs, by default, you know, get met. Because many times when they say to you, what do you want? You say, oh, I don't know, dear, what would you like to do? And they say, well, I'd like to go to Spargo's in L.A. And you go, oh, okay, you know, to go there and sit next to Bruce Dern or something. So it just, it's good for you to remember that you're really not being manipulated. You simply, as a clairvoyant, are not in that position that allows you to act as a, quote, normal person in this world. Because most of, and I would suggest to you that normalcy is a competition, usually, of ideas and projections in this world. And so, if it seems like someone is controlling what you do, before you get into that accusation, just take some time, get into your first chakra a little bit, and then deal with their question, what do you want? You may find that, you know, they're just accommodating. They would like to do what you want to do. They just don't. You're just not saying anything. You're just not saying anything. And the other thing, I just want those of you who have clairvoyance, the other classic thing clairvoyants get into is, since they read everybody, they expect to be read. Okay? So if you're ever sitting there and you say, and this person is saying, well, what do you want? And there's a voice inside of you that says, you should know what I want. You are saying, essentially, this person should read me. I spend the day, you know, like if you're, you know, you're working as, you know, in some kind of healthcare, you're doing healings, you say, I spend the day looking at people saying, what does this person need, and giving it to them? Why the hell don't I get the same kind of treatment? What's wrong with me? You might get very upset about it. And the only thing I can say about that is get over it. If you choose to be a clairvoyant, you choose some form of clairvoyance. Look, that's your choice. Yeah, you are going to be different, and you are going to have to shift gears. But I assume that you will find the work that you're doing that involves your clairvoyance is valuable enough to you, that being that person is valuable enough to you that you're willing to accept a variation in your own personality. And so, you know, one of the things I think is hardest for clairvoyants is to articulate what they want. Because if you're really good as a clairvoyant, people start to value you because you don't project. And so, you know, we're very practical people, you know. So if we look and say, you get value from not projecting, then when it comes time for someone to say, well, what do you want? Part of you says, hey, Walt, you get value from not projecting, so tell them you don't want nothing. It's like, okay. And then you don't feel value, but all of a sudden you find yourself, you know, in this crowded restaurant where everybody's screaming and yelling, and there's a pan playing real loud, and you say, what the hell am I doing here? You know, you have no one really to, you have to really recognize that you really didn't put anything out to shape that world. Your clairvoyance shapes your world. It does. You need to be unafraid to do that. You need to be unafraid to do that. And if you do have clairvoyance, you need to recognize that you're going to have to make yourself at times know what you want, because you'll get in the habit of not knowing it. You get in the habit of not knowing it. So sometimes you just have to make yourself look and say, yes, looking deep inside of me, I really want pizza tonight, okay? And know it right now, it doesn't seem like I even know what a pizza is, but deep inside of me, there's this part that's going to eat a pizza. And be unafraid to bring that out to people. But as I say, one of the things clairvoyants really deal with a lot is they expect people to read them. So, you know, if you do some kind of work, clairvoyant work, remember that other people haven't chosen that pathway. Most people's attitude is, gee, if I thought if you hadn't wanted something, you would trust me and you liked me enough to know that I care about you, so you would say something to me. And it seems so simple. But yet for clairvoyant, it's like, well, I figure out what other people want without them saying anything to me. You know, someone goes to Nelson, you know, for chiropractic work. Nelson's sitting there and they say, it just hurts, doctor. Nelson goes and looks and says, oh, and pushes something, and they go, oh, that feels so much better. Well, no one told Nelson, oh, yeah, go push the third vertebrae and everything will straighten out. Nelson read it and did it. But if he comes home at night and, you know, it's very easy if you have that kind of a skill and whatever level, you come home and someone says, what do you want? There's a part of you that can find it very hard not to say, well, you should know. I know. I look at you. I can tell what you want. Look at me and tell what I want. It's like, so I just ask you to watch it. It's one of those things that really creates conflict for people that use their clairvoyance. Articulate rather than expect other people to be your reader. Clairvoyance is not something that a lot of people have the ability to do. And so you're not really going to find a lot of people who can read you. And that is not a sin. It is not a sin. And I want to give you some real basic, I'm going to give you a basic way to connect clairvoyantly with your chakras. Because one of the reasons that information that comes to you is oftentimes not the full picture, for example, is because only certain chakras feed into people's clairvoyant ability. So, for example, most of you, well, let's see, yeah, about half of you actually, your second chakra feeds into your clairvoyance. So you take emotional vibrations, they get translated through your second chakra, they come up your spine, they go into your head, and so they complete the picture that your mind, your sixth chakra, is seeing. It adds to the pattern. You know, you might look and say, oh, this person's immune system is depleted and emotionally they're very upset about it, or this is causing a problem because they feel they can't take care of the people that they love in their life. You'd feel that on it, you'd get that emotional idea. And so clairvoyance, when it's working well, usually is a compendium of all the chakras. The sixth chakra has an ability to take things apart, as I say, it has ability to unify things. When you connect things, when you see patterns, you're connecting things. You're saying, well, look, this is a pattern. I can recognize this. You're connecting the dots. So the sixth chakra has a unifying function, too, and I wanted to, this meditation that we'll do will bring that unifying function out. In other words, have it be more prevalent so that you can use it. Because I say there's a tendency for people to look at the sixth chakra, it's looking underneath things for the truth, so therefore it must dissect, take things apart. It's easy to forget the unifying aspect of it. So we're going to try to bring some of that to you. I find that this meditation I'm going to give you, I find just works really directly, and it's very, what I like about it is it's very physical. Most six chakra meditations, are usually meant to take you away from the body. And there's a good reason for that. For most people, why are you projecting? Because you're defending the body. If you didn't have a body, you wouldn't project. One of the reasons why sometimes beings that don't have bodies provide very good readings is because they have nothing to defend. So they don't tend not to project. But when you have a body, you tend to project things about it, about what it needs and the kind of world it should live in. And most clairvoyant exercises say, okay, you have to release your attachment to the body. And that is one way of having clarity and sight. Release your attachment to the body. If you have nothing to defend, you won't project, you'll tend to see more. You'll tend to see more. However, I think that approach, I just have problems with that approach, because it tends to create people that have more of an observational energy, or more disassociated from their body, and oftentimes they have good vision of some things, but they never really get the whole picture, because they don't really take in the vibration of emotion, the vibration of what it's like for this physical body to be going through the situation that their clairvoyance describes. So I want to do a meditation. It's not even that esoteric that you can do, that basically will connect up your chakra system to the clairvoyance. And in doing this, I would hope you would gain a clairvoyance that you feel very comfortable with in your body. You can stand there and feel your body and yet see without projecting. It's very possible. It's something that is much more comfortable. We came here to have a body. If we're deprived of it for whatever reason, whether we consider it good or, you know, in service of the spirit or something like that, it doesn't matter. If we're deprived of that body and its company, we start to resent it. So I'd rather have you have your clairvoyance and enjoy your body. There's always enough resentment in the world to go around. We don't need to add to it. So our pattern is going to be very simple. We're going to use a timed breath. I'm going to ask you to breathe in for a count of eight. And the basic pattern, as some of you know already, is to breathe in for a count of eight and hold for a count of eight, then exhale for a count of eight. Now I'm going to have you do that, and I'm going to have you just use your focus, in other words, focus your energy on each of the chakras as we go through that breath. And the focusing, excuse me, the focusing on the chakra comes from your, well, when I say focus, what I'm really asking you to do is to take your sixth chakra and to place its energy in the area of focus. So if I say focus on your first chakra, what most of you do is you take your sixth chakra and you bring its awareness to your first chakra. And you make a link that way. So we're going to make these links. So we're going to go through each breath, breathing in for eight, holding for eight, exhaling for eight, and we're going to keep our focus on the chakra, on each chakra, first the first chakra, the second chakra, etc. When we hold the breath, we're also going to, I'm going to ask you to clench the rectum too, because this stimulates your kundalini, it keeps the, opens up the spinal energies, it allows more energy to flow up and down the spine, therefore makes stronger connections between the chakras and the sixth chakra, and it generally is a good, it generally provides a clear picture, a clearer picture, because it allows you to integrate energy from all the chakras. So we'll be doing that. In general, for your general information, the sixth chakra usually enjoys purple, because purple in its nature tends to put things in order. It tends to have a hierarchical pattern.
pattern. What I mean by order is not, oh, some intrinsic hierarchy where God is at the top and others are at the bottom, but rather it tends to, the person who is using the color, it will tend to prioritize the energy they see in a way that they understand it. So if emotions, for example, are an important thing to you, this will help your sixth chakra be aware of the emotional aspect of things. If seeing patterns is important to you, it will help you be more focused on the pattern itself. Some of you want to see images real directly. So it's not enough for you to see this orange blob that's around someone's throat. If they're having difficulty with someone else, you want to see an image of that person strangling them. And so this will help you to have that. And it will also, these meditations particularly, also help you to clear away just your, we have a lot of cultural prejudices that you'll really become aware of as you open up your clairvoyance. Here's a real classic one. In America, when people lie, they generally have a red color that they put over their third chakra, over their fifth chakra, and their sixth chakra. Because the red is a real thick kind of color. It keeps you from looking in there, so it prevents you from seeing what they actually did, what they're actually thinking or seeing. Now, so you could say, okay, well, in my clairvoyant readings with people, I see that red is a color of lying. So if I say to someone, well, how do you feel about your partner? And they say, oh, I love him or her very much, and I see this red pattern, I know they're lying to me. Well, there's some validity to that. However, for example, in many Asian cultures, for example, in Chinese cultures, red colors are very vibrant, life-giving, connecting colors. And so you may look at, say, a Chinese man or woman and see a great deal of red and say, oh, this person is lying to me or living a lie in some way, and what they're actually doing is simply running an energy which in their mind has a cultural value, the red color. Red is a very vibrant color. It's very connecting. And so you have to, again, this whole issue of projections, even when you learn things as a clairvoyant, you know, you start to recognize different patterns, it's always good to remember that those patterns do not hold for everyone. If you read people from Eastern Europe or you read people from Ireland, they're very different in their coloration. What colors they consider high spiritual colors is very different than what we in America think of that. And if you're going by your past experience, then you say, boy, these people have a real low energy level. They're not really that evolved. But if you look at how they approach spirituality and what their particular take on it is, the colors they run are very appropriate to. Work without projections. A real necessity to work without projections. And these meditations we're doing today, they simply make it easier to work without them. You might say to yourself, you know, you don't have to get rid of all knowledge, but you might say to yourself, gee, red colors in a lot of American people mean that someone's lying. But this person, when I'm looking at them, I don't really get that perception, even though I see something that would lead me to think that. So what do I actually see? I mean, you can approach it from that point of view. You don't have to drop everything. But you do have to be aware that there are cultural differences, there are energy differences, and what people find valuable. Some people, we tend to value people that have an open seventh chakra, that believe things. It's much more, in some cultures, having an open heart chakra is the chakra that makes things, that denotes spirituality. And so I would ask you to just consider, again, that clairvoyance is a very tricky business.
you're gathering information, you're seeing things, you're constantly comparing things, and yet in the end you have to always be willing to drop your research in face of what's actually in front of you. Real simply. And so clairvoyance is frustrating for most people. You can build up a body of knowledge and it can be very useful to you. Like, I can give you all sorts of tips that you could use, that you could read people with, and you'd say, well, this is right most of the time, and then you'd find somebody that it doesn't work at all for. Because all I'm saying to you is this is the general pattern. So generally, people that have a lot of red covering the sixth, fifth, and third chakra, generally they're hiding something. Generally. But they are not always doing so. And so this is why if you've been learning from me for a long time, know that, you know, whenever books come out that say, you know, this color means this, you know, I generally am not very enthused about that. Everything works some of the time. Every bit of knowledge has its use, but its use is situational, not universal. I'm not a universalist. I'm not one of those people that preach that everything is all that's all connected by one idea. There is interconnectedness, but there's not one idea that dominates. And this is what I would suggest to you is the vision that I've seen. And I encourage you to form your own vision of the world. You know, to take what other people say to you and look at it, see if it's true for you. But be aware that it might not be, and have the ability, have the courage to drop what everyone's told you is true and see things the way you actually see them. It's just as much, clairvoyants always have to walk a fine line between conformity and rebellion. They on one hand are looking for patterns, conformity, connection. On the other hand, they have to be willing to push all that aside and take a very singular point of view sometimes. So it's not an easy task. And so if you work with any kind of clairvoyance, you've been trying to and you have difficulty, good, that means you're paying attention. If you didn't have difficulty, I'd worry. I would truly worry. People would tell me, oh, it's easy to see. I worry about them. Because oftentimes it's easy to project. It's easy to project. And one of the nice things, before we meditate, I want to just point out, one of the nice things about our culture is it's so diverse that you really can't assume anything. When I talk to, what do they call them in Mexico, brujas, and the different shamans that work in Mexican culture, especially in Mexico, well, there's certain cultural, when you would deal with a particular village or a culture that's very defined, then people, there's a predominance of people who think alike, and so they can make really, you know, they can have a lot of mythical figures, they can have basic ideas that they all respond to, but we as a culture are much more diverse, and the things that we all respond to, I would suggest to you, are becoming less and less. So everybody would once say, oh, but everybody responds to God the Father, and that was true at one time in America, but now it's not at all. So when someone says, gets up there and says to me, well, even though we come at this between different ways, we all believe in the same God, right? And I say, well, geez, no, we don't. And that really disturbs people. But we really don't. And we don't have to. So I'm going to have you do that exercise with the holding of the breath and the clenching of the rectum. I'm going to also have you, as we've been going through, you've noticed we've been going through the chakras, making that connection through your feet up into the particular chakra, and we're going to continue that with the sixth chakra using a purple color, simply so that purple helps to order your thoughts. It puts them in a way that they can be seen more easily. Some of you will find that white does that real directly for you, but actually most people find that purple works, and so I'm going to give you a purple to try with it. And then I'll just look at you, and I'll have some questions I probably will want you to ask yourselves, but there's no sense going through them now, since I'm just going to take them from what I see when you're meditating. So we'll be right there on the cutting edge. I suggest that Well, for this, I would suggest that you fold your hands palm to palm while we do this, just as a, just to accentuate the unity. So I want you just to let yourself take a moment and listen to your breath. Because this is where we're starting from. This is who you are. No matter what happens, no matter who comes in or out of this room, it doesn't matter. What happens is that, what matters is that you are beginning from the point that's you. You're beginning from your breath. So you listen to it. And as you listen to it, just ask, you say to yourself, just tell yourself, who's here right now? Person that's trying to learn something, maybe. Person that's thinking of having a hot dog after this is all over. Doesn't matter. Focus on the soles of your feet and draw red energy up to the soles of your feet. Breathe it all the way up into your genital area. And exhale, let the energy run down the opposite leg from whence it came. Just open up that first chakra link. Doing this meditation, this rainbow meditation, gets you in the body. It itself is a connecting kind of energy. It connects you to your clairvoyance, puts you in the body, establishes the body as the place where things happen here. Change your mind and draw an orange color up through your legs. Draw it right up into your second chakra. And exhale and send the energy down the opposite leg from whence it came. And with your next breath, just add the red and the orange. Just let them meld together. Exhale, so you have this band of red, you have a band of orange. You're building this up in the lower chakras. Add a yellow to things. Draw the yellow up both legs. Draw the yellow up both legs. Draw it into your third chakra. One of the projections that keep us from meditating oftentimes is what things are supposed to be like when we're meditating. There's no baby supposed to be crying. Nobody's supposed to be disturbing you. You know what? All around you, right across the street, people are drinking, smoking, and cussing. Above them, people are trying not to drink because they're in AA meetings. You know, there's all sorts of things going on around you which you're aware of on many different levels. So don't let yourself project what things should be like when you meditate. Just meditate. Draw a green color up through your legs. Let it join in your heart. Feel the red and orange and the yellow and the green mixing together. Add blue to it. Draw the blue up to your fifth chakra. Now add the purple with your next breath. When you open up the sixth chakra with this purple color, some of you will say, well, I look around and I don't see anything particular. There's like this mishmash, some darkness, and some color. Well, sometimes that's the way things look. We project it the non-physical realm should look a certain way, and in reality, sometimes it's just like an impressionist painting. Now add a white color to this. Draw the white up through both legs, up to the very top of your head. Then as you exhale, let the white come down either side. Now try to breathe all these colors at once. Your breath is red, orange, yellow, green, blue, lavender, and white. Some of you project, I can't think of that many colors at once, and that's just a projection. So when you do this meditation, one of the things that's interesting about it is that it does challenge certain ideas about what you can do. Some of you are challenged by it. Some of you just say, oh yeah, I can do this. And there's no projection. But some of you say, what? Jeez. And that's precisely one of the functions of this meditation, to make you say, I have a projection that says I can't do this. Now we're going to go to our timed breaths. So I want you now to bring yourself consciously to your first chakra. Exhale, push the air out of your lungs. Now inhale with me with an 8 count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Hold. Focus on the first chakra, clench the rectum. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and exhale. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Inhale, focus on the second chakra. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Hold and clench. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, release. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. The third chakra, focus. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Hold, clench. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Release. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Inhale, focus on the heart. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Hold, clench. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Release. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Fifth chakra, throat. Inhale. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Hold, clench. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Release. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Center of the forehead. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Hold, clench. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Release. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Seventh chakra, top of the head, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Hold, clench, 3, 4. four, five, six, seven, eight, release. Two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. And just breathe normally. Try to focus your attention right at your palate point, where the soft and hard palate meet on the roof of your mouth. Touch your tongue to that place where the hard and soft palate meet. Just leave your tongue there. When you do this, this feeds an energy that's coming up, the kundalini that's coming up the spine. It feeds it right into the sixth chakra. So it kind of pushes you and says, look. What I want you to just ask is, what is the major projection about the world that you need in order to survive? What do you have to project about the world in order to survive? You have to project that everyone likes you, that everyone hates you, that authority can't be trusted. What is it? Just ask. See if there's any kind of image or answer that comes. Because it's this projection that's keeping you from seeing. You need to keep this in order to survive. This is what you say. So any clairvoyance that involves dropping this view of the world, you're not going to drop it. Because you're going to die if you don't. If you do, I'm sorry. Now, just to bring this to some closure, I just want to do a chant that clears this away. I want you just to listen to it. You don't have to write it down. I'll give it to you when we're done again, so you don't have to break your trance now to write it down. It's the same chant that Infinity used on, I believe it was Wednesday. And when you start to do it with me, just focus on the sixth chakra as you do it. Amen. relax with the energy. That chant makes a particular space in the sixth chakra. Keep focused. Make a point to yourself that you'll keep that space there. You'll keep that focus there. And just take a breath and let yourself open your eyes and be here.